Pod.
Rugby pod.
Konnichiwa, welcome back to the Rugby Pod. We've gone global this week as I'm here in Tokyo, which is Japan. Biggs is dialing in from the south of France, which is just as nice. Maybe not as nice as Japan, but producer Rob's also sat here from sunny Stockton on tees in his mum's kitchen. So we'll get on to that in a little bit. We've got loads to get through this week, including some chat about Leinster and the monster squad that they're building. They've already got a monster squad, but they've gone even further. They've doubled down over in Dublin. There's a big showdown in the top 14 as well, which we will go through, Biggs, which you were slightly involved in.
Slightly.
As well. Slightly involved. We'll also be looking at the running for the Premiership to the top 4 and into the URC for the top 8. It's all heating up now. So settle back, enjoy, and make sure you're subscribed on Spotify. You know the drill. Right, first things first. Rob, how are you, mate? How'd it go? For the listeners who've not been listening, you had your final dance, the last dance. Talk us through it.
Well, the last dance isn't the last dance because the mighty Stockton Twos were through to the semis, lads.
Unbelievable.
He's back.
We did it. I mean, it probably wasn't what I would describe as champagne rugby. I think the penalty count was probably around the 50s, 60s mark. Didn't win a line-out all afternoon. Didn't win a scrum all afternoon.
A few Nuki Browns to celebrate, Rob, after the game? Or
a couple of bottles of Nuki Brown afterwards, yeah. I'm still feeling a little bit dusty now, as you can probably hear it in my voice, but yeah.
Nuki Brown is about as bad as you could taste, I'll be honest with you, Rob.
A lukewarm Nuki Brown to celebrate a victory.
Got to be room temperature.
Oh, of course. I do feel bad as well, Rob, because mine and Biggs' reaction to that was very limited, to be honest with you. But I want to ask a few more questions, if I may. Rob, seems like it's been sunny in the UK over the weekend. Is there a few boys gone down with sunstroke or no?
Yes, yeah. There were some boys a bit poorly, yeah. Some pink skin and some sick in the guts up.
You've been in Japan. I played in Marseille in the Velodrome and things. And the only thing my missus wants to know about is how's producer Rob's injury? Did he make it through the weekend? And how is this thing? So you're a hit in my house, Rob, anyway. So my missus would love to talk through the game with you. I've got no doubt about it.
Yeah, well, I strapped the ankle up. Yeah. Just taped it on and played on the wing. So what I did was I just volleyed the ball as far as I could any time I got it.
Rob, just on that, like, congratulations, we'll say that. But just give the listeners, like, your point of difference on the rugby field. Like, what do you bring? So if Biggs is like his kicking, strategy, like leadership, mine was me mauling, me brawling, me charge downs, you know, like my tip-ons. And that was about it. What's Rob's? What's producer Rob's point of difference?
I'm one of those blokes that just, like, shouts loads, you know, so in place of actual skill, just makes a lot of noise.
That sounds a lot like myself, Rob, to be honest. That sounds like my career for the last 15 years, mate.
Yeah, I've always found that that's kind of compensated for my lack of ability, is just, yeah, shouting a lot. Point of difference, I don't know, pass.
Biggs, you know, on that, you know, you just said about your shouting and stuff, and you'll get this, right? This is what will happen, Biggs, now you're on the podcast, because the feedback's been great. So a lot of people saying, oh, how good's Dan Bigger? Like, he sounds like a class lad. So them kind of two things together don't necessarily make out that you're not a class lad. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or that you're not going to be great. But it's so funny because even people here, like, chatting to me, like, there's a few kind of foreigners and stuff like that, or expats, so foreigners to Japan, but not foreigners to us. And they're like, oh, you got Biggs on the podcast, like, he sounds like a right top lad, like. And I said, well, what did you expect? And they're like, oh, no, you watch him on the pitch, he looks like a right good, you know what I mean? Like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It is quite funny, isn't it?
It's the same with, like, boys like Mike Brown, someone like that. Like, you look at Mike on the pitch and you think, probably exactly the same, perhaps, of what people think of me. But then you actually sit down and talk to him after the game or whatever. Same with someone like Owen or Johnny Sexton, those guys. All you see is 80 minutes on a Saturday afternoon. And you don't actually see what they're like when you're having a coffee with them after training, or what they're like maybe with some of the young guys or whatever. And I think it's something that you do with, when I watch Premier League football, you think, oh, Rooney looked like a right idiot or whoever. But, like, I've got no idea who Wayne Rooney is as a person, or I've got no idea who Erling Haaland is as a person, et cetera, et cetera. It is quite funny because people sort of have said that. They said, oh, he seems quite calm and sort of maybe knows what he's on about. And I was like, well, I'd like to think I've done all right for 15 years apart from shouting and things like that. But I agree with Rob. I reckon I've definitely made up for a little bit of lack of skill in my communication skills, should we say, Jim?
Yeah, that's very polite. It's so funny, actually, you mentioned Wayne Rooney. See, I'm only going based on the CCTV with all the old ducks that he was trying
when
to knock
about. When I was going in my
with.
Head, I was thinking it probably wasn't the best image to chuck out there. Let's go with like a Scott McTominay or an Erling Haaland or someone like that, just doing the business on the field.
Yeah, but it's really interesting you mentioned Johnny Sexton as well. So the guy that I'm here with, he's good mates with Johnny's brother. And like, so we were talking about, you know, so yeah, it's great to have Biggs, like you're over in France playing, like been good in the media. And he was saying, because he was with me when we got stopped, and he said, oh, Johnny Sexton gets that a lot. Like, a lot of people like think he's a bit of a knob, or he's a bit too kind of brash or whatever. And my mate Ben was saying he's the complete opposite. He's like, you get the gauge, and this is with you, Biggs, like you get the gauge on what the players think, what your peers think, what your mates think. And like, you've seen you pitch side, like with Finn Smith and the lads, and you're chatting to the coaches, you're chatting to the players. So then personal relationships, he said, that's the same with Johnny. He said, the lads love him at Leinster. Yep. Do you know what I mean? And that's all you want. That's all you need. And that's the kind of measure of the man.
And as a, same with Owen at Saris in England. You know, you people who play with these guys for 10, 12, 13 years, they're the people who know the person and the personality, and almost they accept that now and again, you're probably going to receive a bollocking from one of us or whatever, or now and again, you're going to have a few cross words, or you're going to have a bit of confrontation with another player or a coach or whatever. And that's part of the personality. And Johnny, like I said, Johnny, Owen, guys like that, when you sit down and have a coffee with them, they couldn't be more opposite to what they are on a Saturday for 80 minutes. Maybe the Rooney example wasn't the best example for off the field stuff. Let's not make a headline, Owen, Johnny and Wayne Rooney.
It'll happen.
I think the top response we've had from listeners has been Biggs is actually a top bloke, but ask him about the big arena. There's a lot of people asking about the big arena, which I didn't realise was a thing.
It was a tough period in my career, if I'm honest, Rob. I mean, it was a very successful period in my career, but a very tough part of my career off the field, because you kind of, everywhere you went, you took a bit of stick for that and things. And it was during the 2015 World Cup. I'm actually quite fidgety anyway when I'm on the field or whatever, but on my kick routine. But then it kind of, we went to Doha in 2015 and it was like 45 degrees we were training in, and it was just ridiculous. So I found myself obviously sweating more and all the fidgeting and things like that. And it kind of just transferred when we came back into the lovely weather of London and Cardiff sort of thing. So it's funny as well, because you know when you're in that kicking at goal, you're in a zone, you're not really aware that you're in a stadium or you've got cameras pointing at you from all angles and everybody's zoned into you, but you're kind of not really aware. And then when you watch it back, you're like, oh, Jesus Christ, this looks absolutely ridiculous. Yeah, I'm glad people have enjoyed that. I'm not sure I'm going to make a comeback on the big arena, but we'll see. If the pod keeps going well, then we'll see. We'll try and give the listeners what they want.
Does that mean, like, are you a good dancer? Is that?
No, I would say I'm about as bad a dancer as you could come across, Jim. My wife says if I was on Strictly, I'd be booted out first.
I got asked to go on Strictly.
Did you?
This Christmas just gone. No shit. I say asked. I could have been asked with 150 people, but I got asked to go. They went with Sips instead.
God knows why, Jim.
Like for like.
Jim, give us a little bit of an insight what you've been up to over the last few days. Looks like you've been traveling the Far East in luxury, mate. Give us a bit of an insight what you've been doing.
It's been class. I think you might have referenced, Biggs, about appetite to come and play in Japan, maybe a few podcasts ago, that you'd look at it, or maybe it was a personal conversation, but I've heard great things about Japan. So people have said, oh, it's amazing. Like Greg Laidlaw was a perfect example from 2019 playing at the World Cup here. Now he lives here, coaches here. I'll be honest, didn't expect it to be as good as it's been as a country. I'll start with a negative. Can't go to the gyms here. So the missus ain't going to be happy when I get home.
The tats.
They will not let me through the door with the tats. So, which is fair enough. They're pretty shit anyway, but they just won't let me in.
Why is that, Jim?
Because of historic kind of gangsters, and the Yakuzas are all tatted up, and they're basically like the mafia of Japan. So tattoos are seen as that, which are basically, I'm basically a gangster of Kov. So like, they're right to not let me through the door, you know?
Jim, forget about all the interviews you've done with all these world's rugby stars and the training grounds you've been to and the stadiums, etc. Most important question for me, have you found a piece of litter on the floor yet in that whole country?
Considering there's no bins, that is so funny you say that.
There is not a bin in sight.
This is what I mean. I think some people listen to this be thinking, right, of all the things you can talk about, you're talking about no bins and no rubbish, but you notice it. Like, it's It's crazy. So you notice that, you notice how clean it is. We had Freddie Burns talking about the toilets. Like, the toilets clean your own arsehole. Like, literally, you sat on the toilet, it cleans your ass.
The heated seats as well.
The heating everywhere. Heated seats. And I'd say now, I have not got off that toilet. It might sound sick, but until you've been there, you will not know what it feels like. There's like this squirty thing that comes out, and it's just such an enjoyable experience going to the toilet, I'll be honest. So
you're selling Japan well.
Well, I will get onto it, like, because there's some other stuff, obviously, to talk about. But the food, the service, the people, how clean it is. There's no traffic in Tokyo, really, because they normally park, obviously, in these big car parks that take the cars up in lifts. Wi-Fi, it's cheap.
Yeah,
I can see the attraction for players coming, and we will get on to the players that I've seen and they kind of talk about it, but I can't speak highly enough for this place. It is absolutely amazing. The bullet train. So apart from the gyms not letting me in, and I'll be honest, the bedrooms are a bit small. I can't even stretch the back on the floor. But I am loving it here. It's been absolutely epic. And that's the thing, Biggs, with the players, right? I'll be honest, and I'm happy to share it. I thought it was a bit gimmicky. So you come to Japan, easy street, take the money. But it isn't like that. Yes, they're well paid. Yes, it's easier than the URC. Yes, it's easier than the top 14. But like, I went up to Kobe, right? And didn't really know what to expect. And I walked through the door of what looked like a smaller version of an NFL training facility. Like, cool,
yeah,
sleek, brand new. And it was Dave Rennie. So I kind of knew Dave Rennie was there. Mike Blair, my mate, former teammate, coach is there as well. And they've got a lot of the ex-Hurricanes or Chiefs members of staff there. It was a proper setup, like meeting rooms, massive gym, great training facilities, canteen, ice baths, hot baths, meditation room, stretching room. And I was like, fucking hell, this is the real deal.
Yeah.
This isn't about just having a sabbatical. This is like, they're taking the game forward.
Well, we used, this would have been 2013 when Wales toured Japan. We had two matches in Japan and we used Suntory's training ground for the week. And this was back in 2013. So what's that, 11 years ago? The setup blew anything away in the UK. And that's that long ago. Like you said, you had your own lockers. They had the pitch right next to the gym. You could walk out. You had, like you said, recovery stuff. It was just like, it was a proper setup. And I think that's what, like you said, when you see the Japanese league, you think, oh, it's 12 games a year, it's easy streak. But speaking to boys who are out there, I spoke to Liam Williams last week, and he was saying how hard the training is and how intense the actual matches are and how much quality, because you've got so many good players in amongst so many Japanese players who they just work and work and work and give everything, don't they? So all of a sudden you splash a bit of stardust in it with these world-class players and the product just grows and grows and grows. So yeah, I can see the appeal. And like I said, it's not just rocking up to get through the day, to go home and count your cash. It's very much sort of get in, recovery, give yourself the best chance to win matches on a Saturday, which is ultimately the biggest thing there as well.
Yeah, it's really cool. And I saw a list of the players playing. Like, obviously, my algorithm's all over it at the minute. So, like, there was stuff popping up. James Grayson's here. And yep. I forgot he was here from Northampton. Don't know whether he got released from his contract earlier. I didn't even realise he was here.
I think when, obviously, Finn Smith came in, and I think James sort of saw that his game time was going to be limited. I think he had an opportunity. He got released from his contract because he wanted just to play every week. I was at the Saints-Munster game the other week and I saw his dad, and he said he's absolutely loving it. Just playing every week, playing in a team, in a like I said, a professional environment, even though I think James is in maybe the second division. But he said like the facilities that they've got there, not that Northampton's aren't brilliant, but the facilities that he's going to every day, rocking up, enjoying playing, experiencing a new language, experiencing a new culture. I think it's so good when people, you know, especially when younger boys just take themselves out of their comfort zone, because you're always going to get your big, big star name players who are going to get attraction and can go. But I think when young players put themselves out there and say, you know what, I'm going to move halfway across the world and test myself and not speak the language, et cetera, it's really refreshing. So he seems to be enjoying it and doing really well. And he's still young enough again to come back after playing regularly to then maybe push on at Northampton or a club back in England sort of thing. So he's only said good things about it as well.
Yeah, because even on that, I was looking, and I'm going to miss a load of players out, but you mentioned like Hadley Parks is over here, Liam Williams is over here, you've got Cheslin Kolbe, Peter Steph Tatoy, Ardie Surveyor, Damon Dealende, Bowden Barrett, Kurabeti's on the wing as well for the Panasonic team as well. Like I mentioned, Freddie Burns in the second division, Israel Folau.
Yeah.
I mean, the list is endless.
You've had a couple of big interviews that you've done while you've been out there though, haven't you, Jim?
A couple, Rob. Who's out of the five of the two then?
Ooh.
The big ones.
What? Which ones am I most looking forward to?
Yeah.
I think Ardie will be a big one. I'm looking forward to that one. And then Eddie Jones as well.
Oh,
I'm looking forward to that, seeing how you go with Eddie. How is he going to be with you? You know, whether he's going to be open or...
That's the thing. I've got Eddie Jones tomorrow. So when the podcast is out, I'll probably be with Eddie or he's done a runner off me. So that'll be the most challenging, but I'm looking forward to it. I respect Eddie.
Yeah.
He's obviously a great rugby man. He's had his ups and downs of rugby. So he'll be a great conversation to have. Ardie Surveyor was great. Had Damon De Allende, who was wicked as well. Brody Retallick. And I had Peter Steph de Toy on the first day. Out of all of them, Peter Steph was absolutely phenomenal.
Was he?
Do you know what, Jim? I was just about to say, probably that's the one I was looking forward to hearing about the most, because you sort of know a little bit what like Ardie Surveyor is like a little bit out there. You know, Damien Deland is a bit, but Peter Steph de Toy, you don't really get a flavour of what he is just from the rugby field or what he does outside of it. So that was the one I was looking forward to hearing about the most, to be honest.
Exactly that. That was the reason why, because I think I went in there with high expectations, hoping Peter Steph would be good, just because I'm a big fan of him and I know that the rugby public are a big fan of him. Spent an hour and a half slowly walking and talking, surrounded by bamboo trees in just the most amazing setting in Nagoya. And with these, right, there is a skill and there's an art to doing it. And it takes time to work out like how you ask the question, like, do you speak too much? Do you give them the space to talk? Like the Ronan O'Gara is a perfect example, the one with the World Cup. That was a difficult one because Rog likes to stop and think about what he's going to say. So there's the awkward pauses. And I thought, right, with Peter Steph, like how do we go into this? Because he's humble, right? He's a humble bloke, but he's a fucking warrior. You only have to look at the final, 28 tackles, the World Player of the Year a few years ago, but arguably should have been World Player of the Year again. But I thought, I want him to talk to people about how he's got to this point. People see the glory. They see the double back-to-back World Cup winner. They see the World Player of the Year. They see the 28 tackles. But I don't know if you know about his injury profile, Biggs, but he has had some of the worst injuries.
Yeah.
And I got him to outlay them. So I got him to say, like, just talk us through your injury profile. And then he started talking about the injuries he's had. Obviously, nearly had his leg amputated. The fact that in his knee, he's got his dad's hamstring tendon to form part of his ACL. So his dad was on the operating bed next to him. Got him to talk about the relationship with his family. And then kind of got into about like the meaning of being the Springbok. He is old school. So he is this old school Afrikaans like mindset of physicality, hard work. But then obviously the Chasing the Sun doc has come out, Chasing the Sun 2. So that has given me stuff to talk to him about, like stuff that people didn't expect, like the halftime speech against England. And he just opens up. He talks about the relationship he has with Rassi. Epic. He was absolutely epic. So he was my favourite one so far.
Jim, did you get an impression from... Because I always think this with guys like him. He's just won back-to-back World Cups. He's now going to play in Japan. Clearly, the rugby is at a very good level, but it's clearly not a World Cup level and international stage. Did you get an impression from him that it was almost a bit of a release from that pressure going there as well? Is that why a lot of them Springboks go there, I suppose? Because it feels like, where do you go after winning back-to-back World Cups? Do you know what I mean?
I asked him that, yeah. So that question that you're thinking, I'm asking him as well, because the hysteria of going home, and he answered it, loves South Africa, but he lives on a farm. So he's kind of got that space to roam without people not bothering him, but... Oh my God, it's Peter Steph. But Damien De Allende answered that and was like, yeah, he's like the emotional drain it can have, like going home and the celebrations, actually being in Japan where, as we've just mentioned, it's like a country like no other. They were talking about that. So like the emotional side, like the decompression of being here, the fact they don't understand the language. And Ardie Surveyor asked him that as well, like because the All Blacks and the expectation of them to win a World Cup and everything they've been through as a team. I know the World Cup was a good outcome for them doing that, but for him, it's Ardie fucking Surveyor.
Mm.
So he was saying, yeah, he said, actually being in Japan, you just concentrate on your rugby, your training. But even with Peter Steph, like I said to him, is it a lower kind of level. And I watched the game, I watched their game, and they lost at home. Toto Veblitz he plays for. They've got Steve Hansen. They've got Ian Foster on the way. Like I said, they've got Aaron Smith. They've got Bodie Barrett. Like, they're 8, 9, 10. They've got the three best players in the world in that position. So, and then you've got Ardie at the other club as well. So, yeah, they're the questions that I asked. I asked Ardie Surveyor, one's for the fans. It's not about necessarily what I want to know. It's like...
what people want to hear, yeah.
Yeah, so I asked him what it was like being at the front of the Hacker. And he was talking about not fucking up, like making sure that it's all in sync and it looks $1 million. But I talked about the pressure of how he feels. I asked him what it's like carrying. I said, Ardie, give us an idea of like when you're coming around the corner, because he's primal, isn't he? And his answer was crazy. He was like, I'm scared. He's like, I'm coming around the corner. And he said, I'm shitting myself.
Jim, let me tell you one thing. He's definitely not the most scared person on the pitch at that point. It's the person who's in front of him coming when he's coming around the corner is more scared. I can assure you of that. From personal
that's what
experience,
I, said to him.
I can assure you of that.
But that's what I said. I was like, if it's Scotland and you're coming around the corner, if it's Scotland back in 2009, I was like, I can understand. I said, why you'd be scared? We were joking about it. But he was talking about Peter Steff-Tatoy. He's like, the bloke's a fucking monster. He said, so when you're up against guys like this, and that maybe that's why he is so primal, because you remember after the game against Ireland, he was there screaming like a mad fucking warrior. So going into them kind of deep moments that are normal human feelings, but they're not normal. Like, we're not normal. Like, we're called outliers. Like, they are the outliers of the outliers. They're the best of the best. So it's been brilliant. It's been epic, especially, you know, them two being the headline names, I suppose.
Was there anything from any of the players, Jim, which sort of made you think, I didn't know that about him, or I didn't expect to hear that from someone of that quality, or whatever it was? Or was there anything which has sort of jumped out at you during the week you've been there from any of these interviews?
The main thing that jumped out at me, and I didn't know whether to bring it up with Damien De Allende in particular, because I know he's quite open. I could feel the interview. He was opening up more and more about different things. But in Chasing the Sun 2, they talk about the relationship between Dwayne Vermeulen, Ebenet Sabeth and Sia Khaleesi, and how there's friction and how they don't see eye to eye. And then because Damien was so open, I kind of asked him about that, which will be a headline answer and almost a bit kind of clickbaity from that point of view. But I asked him just out of interest, and I said, like, how is that as a player when you've got the three biggest alpha males, the most physical guys in your team, the highest profile players, and there's issues? So him talking about the dynamics of the squad was really interesting, because I'd always find that uncomfortable. Like, you know what I mean? Because we've all been in teams where it can be a bit awkward. So that blew my mind as well.
Do you know what, though, Jim? I see that as such a positive, that there's friction between your big players and your leaders and things, because they all want the same thing. They all want to raise standards. They all want to make sure that the team is lifting the trophy at the end of the tournament or the end of the match or whatever. And it's funny, actually, because I read Gary Neville's autobiography quite a long time ago, and he was saying that in that great Man United team that won the treble, he was saying that Roy Keane, Sheringham, Schmeichel, there was three or four players who disliked each other, didn't like each other as people. But when they got on the training pitch, or they got in a meeting room, or when they got on the match pitch, whatever, they just pulled and they wanted to win so much that they brought people with them, and they sort of forgot about perhaps the personalities, and they left their egos on the side and they just pulled together. And that sounds exactly what that sounds like. They've got three unbelievable players, leaders, personalities. It seems like every successful, proper successful team have got a little bit of that in it.
Exactly. And also off the back of that, and I picked this up with Damien, but also with Brody, and it'd be interesting to hear your opinion on this as well, Biggs, because when you talk to South Africans and whenever you hear about South African rugby, the tagline is, and tagline's a bit disrespectful, but just for this, just hear me out. The tagline is, it means more. You know what I mean? It means more than rugby. And chatting to Ardie and chatting to Brody and referencing Chasing the Sun 2, their biggest foes being the Springboks, I asked about their emotional drivers for the All Blacks, because yes, you've got the Hacker, which is incredibly powerful and emotional. They didn't say it, but I got the impression that their reason why they didn't really have one. And for them, it was very structured. It was very strategy based. Mm. Right, this is how we're going to play. This is the blueprint. But speaking to Damien and Peter Steff-Tatoy, it means more. I could feel it. So when they're telling me, and the way that they're telling me, Peter Steph's almost in tears talking about what it means to play for South Africa. We're talking about one of the best players to have ever walked the fucking planet. And we're walking amongst bamboo trees that are creaking, and he's almost in tears in Japan where no one really knows him, no one sees him. I'm like, that is it. He means it.
Do you know what my take from that, Jim, is that you look at the World Cup that's just been, the one that they just won, the quarterfinals, the semifinals, and the final, all three games, they could easily have lost those three games, couldn't they? But they ended up winning by 1 point. So when you break down what they've just said in terms of that it means more, that it's that's their why for the country, for what's going on in South Africa, etc. Because when you put New Zealand against South Africa or England against South Africa or Ireland against New Zealand, there's, you know what it's like, very, very rarely it just comes down to sort of like one percenters. And sometimes if it does mean that much more to them, then maybe Peter Steph is going to get up and make one more tackle when he's tired. Maybe Damien Delalande is going to fight for an extra yard when he's tired and in that close contact. Maybe they're going to give that just that 1%. And if you add all those 1% up, you end up winning by a point, not losing by a point.
Yeah, and it was so easy for him to answer it.
Yeah.
Both of them. It was so easy. Do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't miss a bit. I knew they were going to say it. I kind of hoped they would say it, but I felt it when they told me, which was really cool. And then I asked Ardy as well. I'll finish on this one. I don't want to give all the content away. But we were talking about him being one of the greatest players to have played the game, which he is, right? He'd be in the conversation, yeah, right, in the top 10 All Blacks to have ever played the game. And I kind of said to him, do you think you need to win a World Cup to be in that conversation? So people are going to love to interact with this. So Rob's thinking, right, I'm going to clip this up, bang out on YouTube. And he was like, well, his brother was giving him a bit of stick because he won World Player of the Year, right?
Yeah.
So he won World Player of the Year, but he didn't win the World Cup. And I was thinking, for someone like Ardy Surveyor to go down as one of the best, because he is, like, he's an absolute freak of nature. Do you think, Biggs, to go down as a great, that you need to win a World Cup?
I think it's very different to answer that, because it all depends who you play. Would you say Sergio Parisse was a great of the game?
I would say so, yes.
But in the era that he played for Italy, they were never going to win a World Cup, were they?
They didn't win a game.
Well,
no. He's got the worst win percentage of any Tier 1 nation.
But that's what I mean. For me, Anton Dupont is the best player in the world by a mile, and he is potentially the best player that's ever played the game. But there's a good chance that he may not win a World Cup. So for me, the short answer is no. But I think when you look at, say, a Kalisi, like, Kalisi's a brilliant player, but because he's captained back-to-back World Cups and winning, being a winning World Cup captain, all of a sudden he goes from sort of, you know, one level to just a different stratosphere, doesn't he? I think it very much depends what team, what era you play in. But the short answer is, I don't think you have to, for Ardy Surveyor to be classed as one of the best players in the world or to ever go down as one of the best to wear the shirt, no is the answer. I don't think he has to win a World Cup. I think probably if you ask New Zealanders that question, I think you get a different answer.
Right, so anyway, I've dangled the carrot on them interviews. They're going to be on Rugby Pass TV. We're just working out a distribution strategy around it because they were that good that, like, we can't just bang it up anywhere and just leave it. So we'll see. But they'll be on Rugby Pass TV soon, and I'll make sure that I bang it all out on social media. But that brings in a lovely segue, Biggs, because there was talk of Jordy Barrett coming to Japan to join his brother to cash in and to train and live in this beautiful place. But he's decided to go to Leinster, who are struggling. They're struggling as a team, as a squad. But for 6 months, what were your initial thoughts on Jordy Barrett going over to the dark side?
It was such a surprise, wasn't it? I mean, I don't think anybody saw it coming. Probably because Leinster are so strong. I don't think they needed Jordy Barrett. Does that make sense? I don't think you could say, right, you go through that Leinster squad and you think, right, what do they need? And they need a Jordy Barrett. I don't think that is what they needed. But what Leinster are so, so good at is they managed to pick people like Jordy Barrett up to go in amongst that team. So all of a sudden, you've got a guy in his absolute pomp in the All Blacks coming over for six months, whatever it is, to pass on all that knowledge to some of the younger guys to help them win. You know, probably by Leinster standards, they've been a little bit below par. Obviously, I mean, losing finalists the last 2 years, but this is Leinster we're talking about. So they probably thought, what do we need, or who do we need to maybe get us over the line a little bit more? And you know what? It's brilliant for rugby in this side of the world because, you, like you said, his brother's in Japan. a lot of players now are sort of thinking, well, France is the option. But for him to come now and be part of the URC and help grow the game and attract new audience and new fans, I think is a brilliant coup by Leinster. I'm not quite sure if he's read up about Zebra away on a Friday night in January just yet, but he'll get there. He'll get there. We'll manage him through it. We'll manage him through it. But I'm sure that will be a highlight for him in his career.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because I did a piece to it, just like a reactionary thing around it, and it kind of stokes the fire around the conversation of like Leinster and the finances they've got, the access to the players, the fact that they seem to be favoured by the IRFU, which it doesn't seem to be the case internally if you speak to people, obviously. But I can understand why if you're a Munster, if you're a Connacht, Paul McHanson, as good as they're doing, if you're an Ulster as well in Northern Ireland, why you would look at it and be like, hang on, so Munster have given up RG Snyman, who's hardly played for them. They have got a fully stacked team of internationals already. Like, you've got Jamie Osborne, Robbie Henshaw, Kieran Frawley. You've got James Lowe, Jameson Gibson-Park, Jimmy O'Brien, Hugo Keenan. You're a fan of Munster, Ulster, Connacht, and you're looking at that team already. You're like, well, hang on, why don't we get Geordie up to Munster? I don't think people understand how it all works, the structures.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, Jim. I'm not fully clued up with how the IRFU sort of work their structure and things like that. But I was quite interested, actually, because I look back at sort of the last maybe 10 years or so of the Irish provinces, and it's not as if Leinster are the only people to have big-name signings come in. You know, Munster had Damien D'Allande just whatever it was, 2 years ago, whatever it was. You had RG Snyman, clearly, who's been unlucky with injuries for Munster, but Ulster had Ruan Pina, Johan Muller. You know, and this is when Ulster and Munster were really competing for European Cups and getting to semi-finals and finals. Connacht had, obviously, they brought Bundy Aki in, who was a huge success, but they had Mills Mulyaina and people like that come in, you know what I mean? And so I think what it is unfair to say to Leinster is that they're just being favoured, or they're the ones who can afford to bring in these star signings, because Irish provinces have always had star signings, and not just good foreign players coming in. You're talking absolute top of the tree people, aren't you? You know what I mean? And your Pinas, your D'Allandes, your RG Snymans. But where I think Leinster have just got it so right is that their academy setup is so advanced in terms of the school system. You look at the, obviously, the team that Leinster can put out in their semi-final against Saints next weekend. It's effectively a British and Irish Lions team with, next year it's going to be with Geordie Barrett and RG Snyman in. But you look at the guys, what you've got in there, you've got the full experience, and you've got guys like Kieran Frawley, Jimmy O'Brien, Joe McCarthy, who no one heard of 18 months ago. And 2 months ago, he's playing against France in Marseille, picking up man of the match. So all of a sudden, you've got these players who are just playing constantly all the time, and the academy system is so good. When you see the team sometimes when you play Leinster, we used to play Leinster, and we used to be praying that all their big guns were rested for a Friday night game in Swansea because these young academy guys coming in are as talented as them. They know the structure. They've been taught it since they've been in college and school and everything, and they're so keen to learn, impress, and become a Johnny Sexton, a James Lowe, a Robbie Henshaw, an Andrew Porter, a Tyke Furlong. So for me, what Leinster do so well is that their academy system and their coaching system is so advanced compared to the other teams. And also the success that Leinster had almost earns the right to have a little bit more preferential treatment. When Munster were the team back in 2006, 2008, people were probably having the same conversations about that team, saying, oh, well, they're signing guys like Maffey and Topoki and all these guys who came in. And Ulster, when Ulster were getting to semi-finals of Europe, if Ulster had pushed on and won Europe 1-2 years on the bounce, then I'm sure the RAFU would have said, right, well, let's keep hold of Pinar. Let's bring in, I don't know, a Bowden Barrett or whoever it is to go and do that. So I think Leinster deserve everything they get because they're just consistently so successful and seem to do things in the right way.
Yeah, and I sound like a broken record because I talk about a couple of things with Leinster: investment and return. So you invest in your schools, you invest in your academies, and then on the complete opposite end of the spectrum of that, the outcome is 82,000 sold out at Croke Park within a few days.
In 24 hours, wasn't it?
Wait, is it 24 hours? There you go. So as quickly as that. So the commercial model marries up with the investment. And when you talk about sport and you talk about investment in the squad, you look at Toulouse, you look at Toulon back in the day in their pomp, you look at Sarri's when they went through the scandal, that was all around investment. I can understand where people would be up in their grill being like, whoa, what about us? What about this? What about that? But it's what about nothing. There's no loyalty in sport, right? There isn't any loyalty. It's sport, entertainment, media, investment, money. That's what it is. And if Leinster have got it, which they clearly have, and for the reasons you've just outlined and we know, the fact that there's no salary cap in the URC as well, it makes the product that they put out there and the quality of players what we're going to see next year. It's going to be epic.
That's exactly it, Jim. Same as you, I get a little bit fed up because Leinster are an absolute machine. And the success that they've had, they deserve to be able to attract more sponsors, to sell Croke Park out in 24, 48 hours. I always remember they've got their own jet, Leinster. So basically, I think whoever they're sponsored by, City or whatever, basically give them a jet. So they private, they charter everywhere.
Amen.
We remember we used to be flying Ryanair back and things like that and the following morning. But they're not going to get people just giving them jets or chartered planes if they're getting knocked out in Europe in the first rounds. Or if they're not winning trophies, or if they're not making a success of their club. So everything they get, they've earned because the machine and the success that they've had in the last 10, 15 years has just been off the charts.
Yeah. Ardie Surveyor said something quite funny because I asked him about it. And he was like, well, who are the best team in the world at the minute? And obviously South Africa is their world champions, he said. But it's kind of still Ireland. He's like, they've embedded Geordie Barrett in there just to get the intel. You know, what are they doing right? What's happening?
He'd be Irish qualified in 3 years, Geordie Barrett, now.
Right, lads, should we talk some rugby then?
What were we talking about? What was that?
That was just hype, wasn't it? That was the hype man.
That was the hype man, yeah.
Did you watch any URC this weekend?
I watched the highlights, and I don't want to call the URC out again, but we have done before, Biggs, that the highlights aren't amazing. You know, because there's some...
Shocking.
There you go, Rob said it. Rob just went straight northern and said it was shocking. And again, say with all due respect, I saw the Ulster-Cardiff game blow up because of Rhys Carey. And I was like, I've got half an angle to pass judgment on it. Yeah. So I was like, oh, forget it. Ulster deserved to win that. But you look at all the social media stuff. Let's start on that one. Let's start on Ulster-Cardiff because we've segued lovely into that. But the big talking points of that was the Rhys Carey intercept. Theo Cabango as well. Hat trick denied, but he looks good. But I think the headline out of that one, Biggs, was like Cardiff going there and they seem like they are improving, but like 14 years without a win. There was headline news in the game as well. Faletau breaking his arm again, which looks unfortunate for him. But what have you made? Like, I've seen the stuff on social media. I know that you're not in on that, but Mike Adamson was refereeing. Yeah. Like, these are the big moments in big games, aren't they, that can't go unnoticed and not spoken about. So here we are, we're speaking about it.
I watched the game on Friday night, actually, and firstly mention on Toby, I think Toby did his shoulder. I spoke to him this morning, actually, and he said that he's done his shoulder and he looks as if he's probably going to be out for another 6 months or so. So, I mean, it's just horrible luck for him. He's in can't buy a run at the minute, so that's tough again. But the game for me, I thought Cardiff played some brilliant rugby, and I think in their last whatever it was 6 or 7 games, they've picked up sort of losing bonus points, so they're right in the mix but not quite getting the job done. And I thought they were really unlucky on Friday night. First of all, the call to let it play on was a good call originally and let it unfold, but then when you go back and check it, there's no way for me that is a penalty offence, what's gone on. And I think even if they'd gone back and made a scrum from it or whatever, then I think that's the right call. But to decide a game on that, and it didn't seem as if they even checked it that much. It looked as if it was just the crowd started booing, so they checked it and then just went for the decision. I thought it wasn't the right call. And I think maybe they were a little bit hard done by Cardiff in terms of the end result. So that would be disappointing for them. That would be tough to swallow. I think they've had a little bit of luck there because I thought they were pretty average on the night. Ulster, Cardiff were brilliant, loads of energy.
Yeah, and the reason why I started with that game, just because it was an easier segue, but I was like, right, how important is that game in the context of it? So for the listeners, right, that race to the top 8, which will be the knockout stages in the URC, from 8 to 11, they're all on 39 points. So Leinster are flying high on 54. Glasgow doing really well on 53. Munster are doing well, had a big win down in South Africa at the weekend. They're on 48 points. But like out with that, you've got the Bulls on 46, Benetton 42, Stormers 40 points, Ospreys on 40, Edinburgh 39, Connacht 39, Ulster 39, Lions 39. And this is where, right, there's issues in the URC bigs a little bit, isn't there? Because of the team that Leinster put out against the Lions. Yeah. So if Leinster went full noise and treated the tournament how people are saying you should treat it, well, if you've got a squad like Leinster, why the hell, when you've got a Champions Cup game around the corner, would you put out your first team? You just wouldn't do that. But the Lions would never win that game.
No.
Do you know what I mean? So if you're in 12th or 13th.
I think as well, with the Leinster one, when I saw the scoreline, I checked straight away to see the team. And it clearly wasn't their first team. But it wasn't as if it was like literally an academy team. But for me, that just shows how big mentally things are in sport, because they've just come off of a huge win against La Rochelle the week before. In terms of, that was a huge game for Leinster, wasn't it, after what happened in the previous couple of years? So all of a sudden you've got to get on a flight to South Africa, you've got to go and play the Lions in an empty stadium in Joburg at altitude, and all of a sudden all you have to be, I've been in games, Jim, I'm sure you have, you've been in games where you've been picked for matches and you're like, oh, I really wish I'd have had the weekend off there, or I really wish I was on the bench for this one. And all it takes is 5-10% to be off it. And a team like the Lions, who can throw the ball about, can sort of score some brilliant tries, have got some X-factor players, are going to cut you to shreds. So I would expect Leinster to be very, very different in Croke Park next weekend in front of 82,000 people. But it just goes to show how big that mentality is. And as well, if you're at the top of the table, Leinster have earned the right to rotate their squad at this point of the year. So no issues for me. But I think, like you said, that win for Ulster, without that little bit of luck, would have been really difficult for them to finish in that top eight, looking at the table as we are now.
And that's the thing, right? Because you've got the Champions Cup as well. And we saw the Bulls, for example, coming to Northampton without their best players because they wanted to rest them for their game at home. And then they get beat this weekend at home. Do you know what I mean? The same as Stormers as well. I know Stormers got beat at home, but Bulls is probably the headline one, isn't it? Because they're going to put all their eggs in the URC to try and get a home knockout game.
Yeah. I don't know what you boys think about it, but I was not pleased, because I haven't got a foot in the camp, but I was kind of pleased that Munster got the result on the weekend, because I can understand Leinster sending not their first team to the Lions a week after they played a quarterfinal against La Rochelle. I can understand maybe certain teams when they go to, you know, when they go away and you think, you know, you can rest players in a league match or whatever. But for me, it just, last weekend, the Bulls team just didn't sit right for me. And it kind of took away from Northampton a brilliant occasion and a brilliant performance, because everyone was just talking about the team. And I was actually really pleased that Munster got the job done and sort of stuck the knife in a little bit further, really, to the Bulls. So Munster were brilliant, and like I said, I was really pleased that they got the result, because I think you know, I'm all for rotating squads and when you're in a position to, but you don't rotate a squad for a quarterfinal of a European Cup. Simple as that.
Yeah, it's so hard, right? And it is the elephant in the room. And this conversation will keep going on and on, because a chat to a few Kiwis here as well, like they almost want the South African teams back to play against New Zealand and Australia, the franchises. Like, I think for myself, like, how would I be if I'm in that environment? Do you know what I mean? So, for example, the Sharks are over in the UK now, then they're staying because they've got the Challenge Cup game at the Stoop against Clermont. You think about being in Japan, right? And how quiet and how nice and how well paid and how much you can put into your training and all of these different things. And then I'm watching the Bulls and the Stormers go back and forth. I'm watching the Lions go back and forth. I'm watching the Sharks travelling north, like, as in the winter period, like the travel. And then they play Edinburgh, they get beat, and then they're hanging about. And you know what I mean? I can understand where the kind of the chaos in all this, when you're a coach and you're trying to get that balance, it's a really difficult one, isn't it? And then you put all your eggs in the basket at home, but the players are slightly undercooked, and you know, the players that have travelled are coming back, and you're trying to prepare for your game against Munster, and it's just fucking all over the place.
Logistically, it's a nightmare for them, isn't it? Logistically, I understand that it's not easy for them. It's not, I'm not saying it's without difficulties, but I also think maybe that's why South Africa have been so good in the last 8 years, because they've had so many boys playing in Japan and not flogging themselves back and forth on flights, et cetera, et cetera. Not, you know, not traveling all this time. They're playing in high-level rugby in Japan. They're getting looked after incredibly well. The seasons are short. They're getting good facilities. And all of a sudden, when they come back to the Springboks camp, they're flying in amongst maybe six, seven, eight, nine boys who are in the starting team for in the URC. So it's a conversation that could go on and on and on. But for me, I can understand why teams would certainly from South Africa send a different side over or rest players or target home games. But it just didn't sit right with me last weekend that they chose to do that against Northampton in the quarterfinal of Europe.
Yeah, I feel you on that. Did this sit right with you? Ospreys going down to Cape Town and getting a good win? That was unreal. Didn't see that coming.
I saw Toby Booth's post-match conference after the game and he honestly couldn't stop smiling. Couldn't stop smiling because I think that's one of the best results in Ospreys history. Especially if you look at the last six, 7 years where the regions have been really, really struggling and not competitive. And to go to the Stormers who've been beaten in the last two finals, to get a result there with, and not just with a Mickey Mouse team, the Stormers, but you had your Lebok, you had Willemsen on the bench, Gallant was playing, Malherb was in the scrum, and the set piece was just incredible for the Ospreys. And they're pretty unapologetic, the Ospreys, about the style of rugby they play. They target and they work a huge amount on set piece, kicking game and defence. And that showed them again. Their scrum was brilliant. Yeah, it was a brilliant victory for them. Toby, I saw Toby Booth afterwards in the press conference on YouTube, and he looked so pleased with that. And that, again, that victory keeps them in the hunt. They go to 40 points. Without that victory, it's a real uphill battle to get into that playoff spot. But a huge, huge victory and one that they should 100% enjoy. And I'd imagine a few of them enjoyed the sights of Cape Town on Saturday night.
And that's the big thing as well, isn't it? Like for the Welsh teams, Biggs, someone needs to fly the flag.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There needs to be a flag being flown somewhere. And yeah, I think you can't underestimate the size of that win down in Cape Town. Like La Rochelle scraped through a couple of weeks ago in the Champions Cup.
Yeah, Toby Booth was saying as well, he was saying that how good, the question got asked to him actually about, is it good that the South African teams are in the URC? Is it good that, you know, the travelling, the staying? And he said sort of like 2 weeks together in an amazing country playing in brilliant stadiums, you know, for when you go on tour there, it's a brilliant sort of occasion and a brilliant principle. And he said for them, it kind of just, you almost go into like a bit of a mini camp when you're there. So for them, he seemed to think it was brilliant. His actual answer was, he said, 2 weeks away from the wife, so it's perfect for him. So I think that probably could get him in a bit of trouble when he gets back. But I genuinely believe that out of the Welsh regions, to me, they look like a proper team. Whereas the other teams who are clearly struggling, but they look as if they're just getting through games and looking to try and just tick them off till the end of season, until the summer tour or till they can get on a beach somewhere. But for me, the Ospreys look as if they really want to achieve together, and they've got a tight-knit group. They're pretty, like I said, they're unapologetic in how they play the game, but you play to your strengths. And for me, I was really pleased for them actually, because they've copped some flack over the last few years, and they're really, really going well in this tournament. So with a bit of luck, they'll finish in that top eight, and we'll have some Welsh representation in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, I got producer Rob to do his job, and he has the running for the Ospreys. They've got the Bulls this weekend up in altitude, but they're conditioned, they're ready to go, the Ospreys boys. Then they've got Leinster away, so what team will Leinster put out? But it's away, so it's going to be hard for them. And then they've got the Dragons at home, which is a winnable game, right? But I think out of all the teams, they seem to have the toughest running from what I can see.
Yeah, it's too tough. The next two fixtures are tough. I would imagine they'll be cheering Leinster on in that semi-final against Northampton in next week, because they'll want to have a shot at maybe not Leinster's top team. But I think if they pick anything up this weekend in the Bulls, it'll be a bonus, won't it? I think after, you know, you look at beating the Stormers, you pick 1 point up away next weekend or this weekend, and you see that as a result. Leinster, look, you could get absolutely spanked, or you could pick something up depending on how they are after what happens in the semi-final. And then Dragons at home, they'd be looking to target that for probably 5 points. So at the minute, they're in really good form. And you know what it's like, Jim, when you're in good form and there's a good feeling in the group, you never quite know what you can achieve, which was proved from that win in Cape Town.
Right, Biggs, talking of spankings and talking of bonus points, to quote Danny Wilson, he was like, that's what's going to get you into the top four of the Premiership are bonus points. And the race to the top four, there's one of eight teams. I've put Leicester in that as well, Biggs. And just for the listeners, because me and producer Rob love going through the archives of everything, but just for the listeners, you've got the Saints on top, comfortably, I'd say, 54 points. Bath on 49. Sarri's 47. Bristol, and we'll talk about them, are into the top four now on 45. Quinn's 44. Sale 42. Exeter Chiefs on 40. And I've put Leicester Tigers at eighth on 39. And they've still got an opportunity. They've got Bristol at home, Sale away, but they've got Chiefs at home. So they've got two home games on that. But the race to the top four is on. It seems like Danny Wilson, the AE Harlequins coach, is right, that bonus points are going to be massive. But chaos, like, it's actually, I really like this running. Like, I like how the Premiership's been formatted this year.
Yeah, I mean, the 10-team league is different to what we've been used to in the Premiership, isn't it? There's very few chances. And if you mess one or two games up, you're in a bit of trouble. Whereas, like you said, I think Saints are well and truly qualified. The interesting thing for me with Saints is they've got Quins away next week, who did unbelievably well to pick 2 points up out of that game yesterday, because Quins are Quins, aren't they? You know, they go 15-0 down and then come back, score some brilliant tries. But that keeps them just a point below Bristol. And they played Bristol the last day of the season, I think. Those 2 points are going to be potentially huge. But the interesting thing for me with Saints is that they've got Quins away, which Quins are going to be obviously fired up and potentially could lose that the week before a semi-final.
So Twickenham that game, yeah, as well.
So all of a sudden they got Gloucester at home. So I think that'll be enough to keep them in the top two. And then Bath away, who are going to be wanting to stay in that top two. But if I'm Saints, I don't want to be playing Saracens in that semi-final. I think Saints will personally fancy themselves comfortably against anybody who finishes third or fourth there. I think even though Bristol are in brilliant form, Quins Quins are Quins. But you look at Sale, Chiefs and Tigers, they come to Franklin's Gardens in a semi-final. For me, that's, you know, you see Saints at Twickenham the week later. But if they finish second, for argument's sake, and Sarri's finished third, from the fixtures they've got with the European semi-final, I think that'll cause them more headaches than any other game, because Sarri's have been there, done it. They know exactly what it takes to win in those big games. They've got big game players. They're not in Europe. Farrell sort of send off or whatever it'll be. I think they just need to be careful. If they finish top, Saints, I fancy them to get to Twickenham. But they just need to be careful that they maybe don't, with the semi-final coming up, with a couple of tough away games, that they just keep the momentum rolling as they have. And they were brilliant again on the weekend. But I fancy Saints are there. Bath with a brilliant win on the weekend down in Sandy Park. Brilliant win for them.
The big thing is with Bath though, Biggs, is no Cameron Redpath and Finn Russell and everything coming out of Bath. It's like, oh, they're looking at them like week to week. But I think the whispers coming out, I might be completely wrong, is that Finn's touch and go. I'm hearing Cameron is out, whether or not he makes the knockout stages. And you think how well Bath have gone. Well, the fact that they're sat in second, Finn's been a large part of that, getting the back line moving with Ollie Lawrence and Cameron Redpath. Will Muir's been on fire whenever he's played. Yeah. They've got the best out of Joe Thokonasinghe, who's re-signed for them as well. Alfie Barbary at eight, Ben Spencer. The names are now rolling off the tongue. But the big thing will be, and they've maybe proven it this weekend by beating the Chiefs, who've been on a roll as well, is can they really do it without Finn?
Yeah, I think that 10-12 axis has been, or you know, with Ollie Lawrence as well, has been a huge part of why they've been successful, haven't they? They've had Ollie Lawrence as that, so it's brute and getting them going forward, and they've had Finn doing what Finn does. But I think Cam Redpath complemented Finn really well, because Finn's used to playing with a ball playing 12 and takes a bit of pressure off him and is a second pair of hands. And I think they've complemented each other really, really well. So without those two players, are Bath a better or worse team? And the obvious answer is they're probably a worse team. So it's going to be far more difficult if they're not playing. And especially look at the fixtures they've got. They've got Sarri's at home, Saints at home, in between a trip up to Newcastle. So it's a tough run in. They're two tough games to play without two of your best players. And that win against Exeter was so important for them. That keeps them in that spot for the minute. But I fancy Sarri's will fancy that on Friday night down in the Rec. They'll send a fully loaded team, as you'd expect Sarri's to.
Yeah. Well, one team that no one was talking about on here is Bristol's 13 tries at the weekend. And look, we've got to put it into context. Like, Rob's like, mate, you need to watch the game. Bristol's were unbelievable. So I started watching the game and I was like, I'm actually wasting my time here, Rob, because it's like a game of touch, with all due respect to Newcastle. But They're into the top four now, Bristol's, but they actually have a tough run in. They've got Leicester away, they've got Saris at home, and then they've got to go to Quinn's away as well. So their running is probably the toughest out of all of them from where they sit. But fair play, 13 tries at the weekend, the brand of rugby that they want to play. I imagine Pat Lamb's been under massive pressure. There's not massive superstar names that are sticking out. Do you know what I mean? When you talk about Bristol of years gone by, you'll know you played them more recent than me, Biggs, with the likes of Piatow, Ranrandra, Nathan Hughes when he was in his pomp as well, like running around. But they're coming good, and Pat Lamb said, shackles off, off we go. Just fucking run the ball.
Momentum is such a big thing in rugby though, isn't it? I think they've picked up, in the last five games, I think they've, was it 24 or 25 points in their last five games? So they're clearly playing well. Yeah. They're clearly scoring points. And almost sometimes, it's funny in the playoff system, if you've got form and confidence going into it, it almost doesn't really matter where you come from. You kind of, if you're just rolling one game after another. So they're going to be absolutely flying in terms of, and confident whoever they play. I know they've got a tough run in, but the way that they're playing at the minute, the confidence that they've got, the amount of tries they're scoring, they're going to be right in the mix, which I don't think anybody would have said at January time or whatever. But I saw some of the stats, and I'm still not sure if this is right, Rob. They 44.
You know where you're going with it.
44 clean breaks.
Apparently.
I've never seen that number, anywhere near that number.
What about this one, Biggs? If we're throwing stats around. Now, Rob, there's no pressure for you, mate, to pressure test these. But this is the one that got me. And this is like the topical one in rugby, Biggs, and there's no better man to talk about it. Bristol only kicked the ball in open play 3 times.
I don't think I'd get a job in Bristol. I don't think at the minute then. I mean, 44 clean breaks and 3 times where you've kicked the ball in open play is, I've just never seen anything like it. I remember once we played Wales, we played Italy, and Italy, they had a couple of yellow cards and we were about 50 points up and we were just running it from everywhere. And we kicked the ball a couple of times and they ended up having a bit of pressure. And the message come on from Gats saying the next person who kicks the ball is getting subbed off immediately. So it just goes to show when, you know, like when you've got the momentum like Bristol have, you almost, and they were finding so many easy gaps, easy breaks, easy meters. The worst thing you can do is kick the ball in your own half, because Bristol were just keeping the ball, and every time they touched the ball they made a break. You had Genge sort of fending, stepping the fullback, scoring under the sticks. Even Sinks was chucking 30-yard passes, which I mean, Radwan picked off one of them, but you know you're flying when your props are doing that rather than the mauling and scrumming. So I thought they were really good. Clearly, there's issues up at Newcastle, Rob, but Bristol were very, very good value, and you can only, I suppose you can only beat what's in front of you, and they did that pretty well on Sunday.
Yeah, I listened to Steve Diamond's interview after, and he basically said they're not going to review it. The lads have got 2 days off. And he said, they've got a 7-hour bus trip home. He said, just leave it at that. Because, like, I mean, what do you say? And again, I don't want to go over old ground. Rob Stockton on tees, second team, legend, loves his team, Newcastle. But you can't make any excuses at all. Guy Pepper, one of the best players, is now signed for Bath. Zero investment. I understand you need to balance the books. I completely get that. But we're in a sports and entertainment business. And if you want to win, you need to keep your best players. So it's a humbling scoreline for them. Steve Diamond's got a massive job on his hands. I don't know what direction that they go. There'll be a big argument for relegation to come back next year. I know there's talk of, well, they've closed the champ off, but how do you follow that? Like, if you're a fan of Newcastle, how do you follow that team? I just don't get it.
With great difficulty.
There you go. You said it, Rob.
But also as well, they're spending like $2 million less than everybody else in the salary cap. So I'm not quite sure what, If you're a fan of Newcastle, I'm not quite sure what you're expecting either. If teams are spending whatever, what is the salary cap? Is it 5.5 or something million? So if teams are spending around about 5 million, and you've got a club which is spending 2.5-3 million, then I'm not quite sure what you're expecting to happen.
Well, you're praying for Moneyball.
We're just waiting for the Saudi money to come in, lads. Yeah,
yeah, they're waiting for Saudi Moneyball. Either or.
Should we have a little look at what's going on elsewhere though in the world of rugby?
Yes, Rob. Let's do that.
I just wanted to move quickly away from a deep dive into the Falcons Falcons season, but it was a big retirement announced this week, wasn't it? A bit of a sad one. One of your mates.
Yeah, Peaks. Ken Owens finishing officially. Although I think probably deep down, I think he knew that over the last 6 months or so, it was going to be really tough for him to come back from a back issue which he's had, well, whatever it was, 18 months ago nearly now. So massive personality, brilliant captain, most capped hooker for Wales, 91. I think it was 91 times. Whatever, 4 or 5 for the Lions. Yeah, a real personality in the game and someone who gives everything. So yeah, real sad day. It's kind of, at the minute, it just feels like one a week is a kind of retiring from my group. So I'm not sure I'm going to be too far behind him, to be honest, the way the back is feeling. But massive. I mean, great. Like I said, big personality, amazing player. But I think clearly he hasn't been right for some time and needs to prioritise his health rather than kicking a rugby ball about.
Yeah, hell of a career. Like, proper rugby man as well. Like, almost bridged the gap between, like, the old and the new. You know what I mean? Like, as in from that ilk. So, yeah, Ked Owens, the Sheriff, absolute legend. What else have we got, Rob? Adam Radwan, man. He's off to the Olympics with GB. So, Newcastle's fastest player, one of their best players. He wants no more of it. But good opportunity for him. Biggs, are you seeing the attraction for players leaving Union or having a sabbatical? Michael Hooper's the obvious one. Anton Dupont's the highest profile one. But now Adam Radwan, man, he's rapid.
Yeah, he is some player. Like I said, he's probably, like, you put him in any other team in the Premiership and he's probably right up there for starting for England in terms of how good he is, how quick he is, what he can produce. Like you said, Jim, you're seeing more and more players trying something different and trying to grow the game a little bit. So this is an amazing opportunity for him to go and represent Great Britain in the Olympics. Same as it is for Dupont. Same as it is for Zamit to go to the NF. You know, just go in different directions. So the appeal is clearly there. And I can tell you one, I would not want to be defending him on a sevens pitch. It would be extremely difficult for myself and you, Jim, I'd imagine.
I love how you say that. Imagine. So you weren't 100% convinced, but it's fine. You can rinse me. As we become more comfortable, Biggs, you can rinse me.
Yeah.
Right, I'm going to speed through a few of the other ones that we've got as well. I mentioned it earlier, but Ian Foster is off to Toyota for Blitz with Steve Hansen. Not that they need another All Blacks coach, but I mentioned at the start of the show in Japan, they're doing things right. You've got Robbie Deans here coaching as well. You've got Dave Rennie, my mate as well. Tatsy is coaching Greg Laidlaw, Mike Blair. So, forget it. Just add in Ian Foster as well. So he's coming over here. What else have we got?
Fastest ever hat-trick. Or the fastest hat-trick at the start of a game. Tom Parton.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Tom Parton, the old Parton. Yeah, that was good. And then off the back of that as well, Josh Hathaway. We were wondering, is he Welsh? Is he English? He got a hat-trick for Gloucester. But off the back of that, I'm going to shout out to Seb Blake as well. Unbelievable little grubber. And we talked him up for that win against Leicester down at Welford Road. He set up that try for Varney to go through. So Seb Blake, mate, you've got all the skills, all the tricks in the box. But Josh Hathaway, is he Welsh? Is he Biggs?
Well, we need all the help we can get at the minute. So we'll find a grandmother or something somewhere. I'm not quite sure if what his connection is, but clearly he's obviously Gloucester sent a bit of a different side up to Sarries, didn't they, with the semi final next week and prioritising that in the Challenge Cup. But looks a real talent. It's only, you know, you score a hat-trick against Sarries away from home in the Prem, and then the guy, your opposite number, goes and does one inside 20 minutes. So you'd be pretty gutted for him. But yeah, like I said, Seb Blake, absolutely on fire at the minute.
Yeah, he was, yeah. Another one that was on fire, Alfie Barbary. So we'll give him a shout out. He was good again. 14 carries, 6 defenders beaten, 10 tackles and a try. I don't think he's far away from England. If we keep talking him up on here, both of us might not pick him.
Yeah, looks good. Looks really good.
Right, we'll throw a few negative ones in there as well. Solomon Okata sent off, pivotal moment for Leicester. I'm not saying that Northampton wouldn't have won that game, but it opened the doors, didn't it, Biggs, for Northampton to run in a few at the end.
It's funny, isn't it? Some of the red cards you can get away with a little bit. Like, we had a red card on Saturday evening, but we managed to sort of galvanise you a little bit, and it was the second row, so you can hide it a little bit easier. But that red card was tough. It was a clear red card, swinging arm to the head of Fraser Dingwall. And what made it a lot worse than what it was as well, the Tigers had just got themselves back into the game at 18-17. And then 10 minutes after that, Saints moved the ball into the wide channel with obviously Leicester being a centre down and three quick tries. And all of a sudden, the game's absolutely well and truly gone. So he looked pretty despondent in the crowd as well every time the camera went to him. I think he knew that, you know, that probably has ended Leicester's season. So a tough weekend for him. But Saints, like I said, you give this team a bit of a chance at the minute and they're going to punish you. So Solomon Okata was a difficult weekend for him, shall we say.
Yeah, we'll do one more negative one because I don't know how you go high on Craig Casey, who's 4'5", but Johan Goosen did for the Bulls against Munster.
He was very, very upright. I think he knocked himself out as well, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He didn't look good after. So we don't want to joke too much about it. But
no, but that just goes to show, didn't it, the height, and it looked a nasty one, to be fair. And again, that probably played a part in Munster coming back and winning. So not a good look for Goosen or Kata on the weekend, who got themselves into a bit of trouble.
Absolutely. Right, that's a negative. Let's finish off with a positive, because we've got a few shout-outs to do. The first shout-out is to Blair Gowrie RFC. They are a small grassroots club in central Perthshire up in Scotland, and they've achieved the monumentous.
It sounds good.
They've achieved something big. Monumentous goal of playing at the Hive Murrayfield in the National Bowl final on the 27th of April at the SRU's Silver Saturday. So for a club that's so small, it's a huge achievement for everyone involved, the committee, the team, the coaches, all the volunteers. They're a real grassroots rugby club, and it's all about creating a positive environment for youth and old people alike in the local community. So got a great wee clubhouse. They're talking themselves up in an absolute storm here, which is good. It's good positivity, but they appreciate the support from us at the pod. So big shout out to everyone at Blair Gowrie Rugby Club. Good luck at the game at the Hive Murrayfield Stadium on the 27th of April.
And the Royal Navy lads have been in touch asking for a quick shout out. They had a narrow victory at the weekend against the RAF, which ended up with a score of 25-24.
Oh, and proper narrow.
Yeah, very narrow, yeah. And one of your old mates, Biggs, Sam Matavis, he scored a worldie of a try, didn't he?
Rob, I'm gutted he scored it. I'm pleased for the Navy, but I'm absolutely gutted that in a tight match, he scored a try like that to decide it. He will be over the moon with that. He's one of the most skillful players you'll meet. Whenever we were doing kicking practice or whatever, he'd always be warming up with drop goals, knocking over goal. I generally think he'd be one for...
Ooh,
yeah,
Big Sam.
Big Sam's
knocking over drop
goals. I reckon
goals.
If it came to it, we had a few injuries and it went to like penalty shootouts in terms of goal kicks, he'd be on the reserve list for sure. But the try was amazing. Just to give the listeners a bit of a feel, the ball over the top, he's on the touchline, not doing a huge amount of rucking or mauling, I will say, in that game. I would say, I think he didn't fancy that too much, but beats a guy on the inside, chips it over the top of the fullback, catches, scores, gets the Navy over the line. So as much as it pains me to give Sam a shout out, a massive shout out to the Navy, but not so much to Sam himself.
I love that. Not even the second name. It was like he's so arrogant that they won't say Sam Matavesi. So that's who it was. Right, I've got the last shout out, and it's to all the London marathon runners. It gets me every single time. I don't know how you do a marathon, but thousands and thousands of people do. So Graham GT from the Rugby Pod, who does our commercial stuff, he ran it for Brave Minds. He's got an unbelievable backstory. It's not for me to talk about. It's on his social media, but he ran it along with thousands of other people. And I've got a couple of people actually that have done a little bit of media around, you know, they're interviewing people on the way around, and some of the stories are just incredibly sad, but with great sadness and these things that happen in the world and the horrible illnesses that people have had and the reason why people are running, they seem to inspire people off the back of it. So a massive shout out to all the runners, people involved, all the charities involved with the London Marathon, and especially UGT. Congratulations, mate.
Thanks, Big Jim. Let's wrap it up.
Right, let's wrap it up. Thank you, Rob. Thank you for the stats, and thank you for the information and the energy, and well done at the weekend. So you're in the final now, right? Is that right? We didn't even get to that
semis.
Point. We're in the semi, right?
No,
semi. So
yeah, we've got a semi now.
Right, we're going to be there for the semi-final. Biggs, you're flying yourself over. Awesome to have you again. But big thank you to all the listeners, everyone who already subscribes, who follows us on YouTube and Spotify. But if you haven't, make sure you are subscribed on Spotify. And that's it for now. I'm coming home tomorrow after Eddie Jones. I can't wait. See you soon. Rugby Pod.
Rugby Spod.
That a boy. Go on, Rob. And you, mate.
Pod.